few more minutes with Russell Shorto, who has done a wonderful thing with Descartes' bones. He has given us a detective story. He's given us an anatomy lesson. He's given us a cultural exposition. I do exposition.
You can.
And a wonderful intellectual romp with Descartes' bones. You say at some point fairly early on that idiosyncrasy, being idiosyncratic, is dangerous business. Isn't that part of this story? Is that if you're going to be out there on those edges, you better be ready for some real challenges?
What I say is that idiosyncrasy is sort of on the way out. Its importance is diminished in society. And I think it's important. It's an important thing to be able to open yourself up to exploring the nooks and crannies. And not, I mean, this gets back to what we were saying before about the toy model approach to understanding reality. I mean, if you've got your little pegs that you, which is how you know what history is, how you know what America is, how you know what your patriotism rests on, I mean, that's very flimsy.
Well, I look, as Bill was talking about, we're in an election process.
Yeah.
I'm baby boom, class one baby boom. And the Eisenhower years were very straightforward in do it mm-hmm. this way. This is the model. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not in any way deviate from it. And it sort of feels like there are people now in this process who want to go back to that. You know, it's got to be my way. It's got to be simple. Mm-hmm. You can't possibly get, but you can find that in any culture.
Oh, certainly. I don't think, I don't believe in denigrating Western culture on those grounds and saying it's inferior to others in that respect. I think that's probably something inherent in cultures and inherent in human nature.
Bill?
Bill disagrees.
No, I just...
You may.
No, I think the lesson in this, is to me, is a lesson in humility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Descartes was clearly a very smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
With a small brain capacity, apparently, that is by mass or volume or something.
But a big brain the other ways.
It's to me that the lesson in this is the importance of the learning, and I go back to the resources we now have available.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the Enlightenment as the simple day-to-day lesson in the Enlightenment for us is a commitment to evidence rather than opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of us would agree on that. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a common yeah. ground where yeah. we can live there. Right. Now, at some point, that we start coming apart when somebody is not willing to accept the evidence because of some prior perspective,
mm-hmm.
some what I view as a prejudice,
mm-hmm.
whether that is a fundamentalist Enlightenment perspective that says it has to be absolutely rational.
Right.
Which makes a hash out of Heisenberg,
mm-hmm.
Or whether it's a fundamentalist religious perspective that says that because my deity says it this way, then it has to be this way regardless of the evidence. And it seems that part of the opportunity here is in the growth of the amount of evidence that we have access to,
mm-hmm.
What by any reasonable standard would be considered valid evidence,
mm-hmm.
that some things are the case and some things aren't the case. And to me, part of the joy of this is to understand the richness of these sources, that by understanding them makes it easier to evaluate the quality of the evidence before us.
Yeah, but the challenge also is that with these great mountains of evidence, that puts a lot of effort necessary on the part of individuals sort through to the internet is the example. I mean, how do you,
yes.
This is what I say to my daughters all the time. You know, you got it from the internet. You know, this is how they're taught to do research.
How to trust your
sources. Where do you,
this
you
is
know?
A test in who do you trust.
Yeah,
and
who
I mean,
do you trust?
And in some ways that's right at the heart of everything we're talking about
mm-hmm.
here. And
mm-hmm.
in one case we have trusting a methodology.
Yep.
In the other, we have trusting an authority,
mm-hmm.
and
we've
got lots of variations and
mm-hmm.
combinations
mm-hmm.
of that. And those inquiries, it seems to me, are very, very, very important.
You subtitled the book, A Skeletal History of, The Conflict Between Faith and Reason. Isn't that right at the heart of what you both are talking about? Isn't that what this book is about, is to try to come to terms with that?
Yes, and saying that, in particular, beginning about 400 years ago, this became an issue. It became a philosophical issue, a political issue, an issue within individuals. And it has played out in different contexts in the centuries since then, and it plays out, and it's as alive today in our beings and in our world in 2008 as it was in Descartes' being and in the early 1600s.
If the modern is over, as some say, where does that leave us to go?
What's well, that? People for a while there, people thought we were in the postmodern, and then it sort of got pushed to the side a bit. So I think that's what we're wrestling with now. I mean, I live in Europe, I live in Amsterdam, and I think people are wrestling with it there in a very interesting, very pointed way, as they have seen themselves as the archetypal tolerant culture, and now they're feeling, the same people are feeling that their tolerance has gotten them into this difficult societal quandary, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what is after the modern.
And the answer is?
Well, this is where we are. Next chapter.
The exploration is, the adventure continues.
Yeah, exactly.
We thank you. What a pleasant surprise Descartes' bones in all of their dust have brought us and brought us you. Thank you again.
Thank you both very much.
We thank Russell Shorto for putting Trying Times in the World at Large to work in writing Descartes' Bones. It is fascinating. And we're delighted that he continued exploring the Enlightenment's powerful ideas here with us. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.